You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is David Bryan, and this is Curiosity Invited, a podcast inspired by endless curiosity. Tune in for an open-minded conversation about interesting and important things. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Curiosity Invited. My name's David Bryan, and today I have the pleasure of speaking with someone who I've actually known for quite a while, although not closely, but Josiah Citrin. The name may or may not be familiar to you, depending upon where you are, but if you've paid any attention to fine dining, to cooking, to where to eat that is dazzling, you've obviously heard his name. Josiah is a highly regarded, internationally known chef located in the Los Angeles area, although he may have places all over the place that I don't know anything about, but that's not why we're speaking. We are speaking actually because of the tragic death of Josiah's son. I believe he was 23. Augie.
Yeah, 23.
August. Is Augie short for August?
Augustine.
Augustine.
Yeah.
Got it. In December of 2020, and you know, in addition to feeling bad and being crushed and being hurt and mourning, to Josiah's great credit, he also started to speak about it in hopes that he could shed some light and offer some information and cues and clues to other parents and other people to prevent this from happening to others. And sadly, tragically, it happens to others all the time. So it's obviously a sensitive topic, and I hope folks listening to this will find some reward. So Josiah, thanks so much for being willing to speak about this, and I know it's terrible, and would you want to say something about the circumstances of Augie's? I mean, I know you've said it, you've spoken about it. It may feel like you've spoken about it a lot, and that everybody must know by now, but some folks will not, for sure.
Yeah, no, it's one of those things that you can never speak about it. In this situation, I don't think you can ever speak about it enough, just because of what kind of the current situation in this country with the situation. So Augie passed away from fentanyl poisoning. I always make sure that when I hear of new parents or people that say their son, their child overdosed or their daughter, I always, when it's fentanyl, I just want to make sure that it's not an overdose, it's poisoning.
Right.
Underline that.
I'm really glad you said that because that's absolutely what it is. But yeah.
Yeah. So let's say, well, obviously there's always overdoses on junkies, heroin. They do overdose, or fentanyl addicts, they do overdose, but more likely they know how to use the fentanyl. So that's not, look, I'm not going to say it's not as widely, but it's, if they're a fentanyl addict, usually they understand how to use fentanyl and what they're doing.
Right.
The poisoning part comes in when these from adults to kids to anybody are buying what they think are pharmaceutical drugs. Okay, so like Percocet, Oxy, Norco, Vicodin, Xanax, even Adderall nowadays. So it happens when they're buying these pharmaceutical drugs, which are not pharmaceutical drugs at all.
They're buying from
dealers,
non-registered, illicit drug dealers.
They're buying from dealers. They're not buying it from a pharmacy, and they're not getting it anywhere like that. Now, So they're not.
Yeah. So this is clearly
fake.
Poisoning.
Yeah. It's poison. It's fake. So they're buying something they think is a Percocet or a Vicodin or anything like that, a Xanax. And they're, most of them in this day and age, a lot of mental health, you know, our youth is very stressed out. They're very anxious. Things that I didn't grow up feeling. I didn't notice. Maybe we had it. I don't think we didn't have all this pressure on us was to be somebody like on the phone. And you just had to be as good as a person on your block or you had to, you know, in your class. It wasn't a worldwide thing. So
I didn't have that problem. I was nowhere near. I know I wasn't going to be better than people.
Well, I'm just saying, but in general, the pressure was, it wasn't like constantly there and the feelings were different.
Yeah.
So they look for relief, a lot of these kids. And a lot of them are not addicts. A lot of them are taking it for the first time. Second time, I don't know, you know, and so it's a, so basically the poisoning would be you're taking something, you don't know what it is, and it's right. fake.
Right.
And it has nothing to do
you
with.
You believe it to be something, but it's yes. something else.
Yes. And then there's no, in the fake fentanyl, there's no hydrocodone, there's no anything that's in a real drug. It's fentanyl and some crappy binders inside of it to make it.
And, you know, not that you're an expert on this piece, but as you understand the story, the reason it's that is it's cheaper. I mean, the reason,
yes.
like, why does somebody do it? Yeah.
Okay. So I think we'd say we could start like this. I'll do my interpretation of it.
Yeah.
What I've read and learned. Well, so we went through a point in this country where parents of my age and a little older was like, okay, you have a problem? Here's a painkillers. Oh, you're stressed out? Here's Xanax. Oh, your kids have hyper? Give them Adderall. You're having focusing issues, take Adderall. So for until like 2014, I think we were pretty much flooding the market with opioids. You can get prescriptions. And at that time, so if someone bought a Vicodin or a, you know, Percocet or something on the from a dealer, it probably was actually a real Vicodin.
Yeah.
Then the government realized that we had an opioid problem in our country. And all of a sudden, it got really hard to get a prescription. You no longer could just, oh, my ankle hurts, and then get a, you know, a prescription of 100 Vicodin. So that got pulled back. And then the triplicates, you know, Vicodin was a drug that could be called in over a phone in the early 2000s,
right.
as opposed to now it's very highly allocated, or I'm the word, but
so that put more restricted.
So that put a void in the market, you know, and drug dealers, cartels, and then fentanyl comes along, and they get okay. Well, here we can make this thing that's even stronger, more addictive, and we can sell it. And it costs so 2 milligrams of fentanyl is deadly. 2 milligrams or more is deadly. That's like a knife point. It's hardly anything. You can barely see it. That costs like 2 cents. So they can sell, and then they want to use less than that, right, to make the drugs. But it's being made in facilities that are, you know, it's not proper mixing. It's not proper. Nothing's being supervised.
Sure.
There's no testing. So we have all these drugs that are maybe 100 of them are fine, and then 4 of them have too much fentanyl. But basically, so these drugs are being made. They're not being supervised. Some are like a chocolate chip cookie. You hear stories about 2 kids splitting a Percocet. One dies, the other one's really sick because it's like sometimes you might have a chocolate chip cookie, right? And you split the cookie and one side there's a lot more chocolate chips and the other side you feel like you got screwed.
Right.
Well, now you wish you had the side without the chocolate chips, right?
Now you really get screwed.
Yeah, so that's kind of what's basically why I say poisoning in a nutshell.
Yeah. Well, and it is. And it absolutely is. So thank you.
And then, you know, back to the point of our kids grew up hearing us say, oh, I got a Vicodin for my bad back. The doctor prescribed this to me. So then they also think these are safe drugs, right? And technically, you could take 15 Vicodin a day for many years and not die.
Mm-hmm.
It's not good for your organs. It's not, you know, and a lot of it's the binders. It's not even the hydrocodone inside of them. So you can do this for many years. There's plenty of people who have been on Vicodins and pain pills, and you don't die.
Right.
And you don't die from taking one pill.
Right.
So that's why I think it's poisoning, because it's really important to know these are not overdoses. And then I think people think about overdose for junkies.
Sure, exactly.
But these are just people doing what's normal in life. And like Augie, look, he was not an innocent kid. Don't get me wrong. And he liked marijuana and he smoked a lot. He was not.
Can we speak about that just a little? And yeah. So Augie was not on any prescription medication, like, you know, for pain. Like he wasn't like, oh geez, I'm taking my Vicodin, but I want more. So it was for
pure fun. It was for fun. And he wasn't one someone who was addicted to pain pills. He wasn't taking them. Look, he smoked pot. He was into pot. And I met when they called me, unfortunately, the coroner, and they were like, fentanyl. I was like so shocked. And I knew nothing about really what was going on at that point in 2020. You hear little bits about it, but I had not looked into it. So I had no clue when it was fentanyl. Like, and I knew he never was really into pills. That wasn't his thing. Like he liked more like things that were going to inhibit expand his creativity for his music, the way he thought. He was an avid different thinker. So acid or pot, or that's really what he was more.
That's the Augie. I mean, you know, truth in advertising here. I mean, I knew Augie only slightly because he was a ninth grader.
Yes.
The last year of my tenure at New Road School, where he went to high school, and he was a fun kid. He was full of life, and he loved to laugh. I mean, this is how I remember him. You can tell me otherwise, but. And he was creative, and he was mischievous. He was fun. He was, but never with a, you know, never with anything but a good heart. I never knew of him as he wasn't mean spirited. He wasn't nasty to kids. Maybe he was, but I didn't know it. But he was just a fun, really interesting kid.
Yeah, he was never mean spirited.
No.
Yes, he was a very sweet person, and almost, but also one of those tormented. Where they have a name for they think of indigo children, or he definitely a lot of life he lived. Yeah. He did not. He came out from the minute he came out. He was couldn't sleep. I mean, it was very. It was not. I think he was tormented with pain from just that he couldn't handle the world the way it was. He couldn't understand all the pain in the world, and it affected him.
And how did that show up? He expressed that in his music and
music, just the way that you know you watch kids grow, and if you're aware to children and you're aware to your kid, you'll see that they are the person they are when they're born. They come out a certain way, and we could just guide them the best we can.
Yeah,
but all the beliefs he had, and just you know, he was very. Into the, you know, very wanted justice for everybody. He didn't, you know, he was very, you know, he believed in Marxism as it was truly intended to be, not communism or, you know, that everybody should be treated equally in the world. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, it's not that way. Those are just some of the things, but he was tormented in. Like he was happy and very, when you see him, happy-go-lucky, very, you know, out in the open. But there was a lot of turmoil inside he didn't care what people thought about him. But I think in the end of the day, everybody cares about that somewhere.
Yeah.
And it's hard to explain it, but he definitely.
And you guys were close, right? I mean, he was.
Super
close. As I know your family, it's a real family. Everybody's. Everybody's there for everybody.
Yes, we were super close and spent a lot of time together. Did a lot of things together as growing up. I mean, I worked a lot, obviously, in my business, but I always made sure that I was there for the kids as much as I could be. And the time I spent with them, we'd do a lot of stuff, fun, hang out, you know, activities, or whether it's going to baseball games or going to have sushi and just, you know.
Yeah. And listen to what's on his mind these days, which I'm sure was wild and wet.
Yeah, he was very into discussions with him were always intense. He was super quick to learn everything. Like he just knew a lot. He had so much information. And what he didn't know, he looked a couple minutes, put his long, skinny hands on his phone, and he knew all about something just like that, you know.
So after high school, Augie goes off to college?
Yeah, he went to Bennington.
He went to Bennington.
Yeah, he spent 2 years there. And then he got a girlfriend and then she didn't want to stay. And it was just that one of the really dark relationships.
Yeah.
And then after that, for then he went to do like, he went to like a few months in Nashville at Blackbird Studios, where he did an internship. You know, which is a great, I don't know if you know about Blackbird Studio. Yeah.
I mean, I just know the name and I know it's highly regarded, but I don't really know.
Yeah, so he went there and learned a lot about recording and he also worked for one of my friends for a while. So he really knew his music and he produced a lot of music in the last, like, in the pandemic. He put like 5 albums that he'd been working out on Spotify.
And where was he? Where was he living when all this, when this happened? When this,
he lived in our back house, my back guest house.
So you,
in LA.
You were seeing him. I mean, you were,
yeah, we were together. And plus, it was a pandemic. And
yeah,
we were having, I mean, more meals I had together with my family during that time.
Sure.
At home, because we were coming home early from work. This was during the second shutdown.
Yeah.
Which also, I think, had a huge effect on him. He had been working at Charcoal, one of my restaurants, bartending, and he was enjoying it. And then, like, the shutdown happened. It's like, nowhere to put that energy and no places to go. This is the second shutdown in the December 2020. It started right before Thanksgiving. And that was funny because I could see he was getting, he wasn't working. We were just doing takeout, and he definitely needed to be stimulated. And I don't think that that would stimulate him, but I just had seen him like getting reckless. Just not, I could see that the energy, he had needed to focus energy and he had nothing to do. And so I was like, I just like that day, I was telling him, okay, next week you're going to start, not that this changed anything, but you know, next week I want you to start working again. You know, I could just see. So, and he had a new girlfriend and they were kind of hanging out and they went out that night to Hollywood. And so it didn't happen at my house. It happened at her house.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure exactly like why they, you know, they obviously took the drugs together, but she didn't have as strong of a,
she got the other half of the cookie.
Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah.
And that's kind of what happened.
And so you get this new, so it, I mean, it obviously hit your family hard. And
no, it's hard.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, it's a sensitive question, but I know your concern about this, or I know your energy about this is about other people and other parents and other kids. And so, like, has it changed? Has it affected how you are as a parent and how you parent? And have you, and here's a, you know, maybe it's an unfair question, I don't know, but has it, when you look back, do you have clues for other parents about how to parent, how to, you know, what to look for, what to say, what to, you know, all that stuff that,
I mean, in a way, I don't know what I could change. I thought, you know, as a parent, because I think as a parent in this world, if everything is changing, honestly, so fastly, so fast, everything keeps evolving and changing. And then, you know, with the, like, this fentanyl thing came on the market like crazy. So, you know, because I mean, I told him about, you know, he knew I was always, he knew what I, how I felt about, like, look, I'm not going to be a hypocrite because I did a lot of partying when I was in the restaurant business and working, and he was always careful. But I think that there's nothing I could do to change what happened for this, because this was a one-off thing.
No,
and
no,
then you sit, and then you can go down the rabbit. But you know, look, he had his own things, and he had, you know, he had. We find out he was, you know, he had a bipolar, and then which evolved into borderline personality disorder. Mm-hmm. You know, he definitely had some hard relationships that didn't work great, like. Very traumatic relationship with one girl. So he basically, you know, he had traumatic stuff. He didn't definitely, he was, went through a lot. He went to like, I don't, it's not like he went one time, he was working out in that Clearview, I think it's called, working on that borderline personality disorder stuff. He did some time in a place where, like, it's, I wouldn't say it's a rehab center, but it was not, because he wasn't, like, he didn't, they couldn't smoke or do anything there, but it was mostly about the mental health issues. When he felt really a lot of anxiety. So he was doing it. But actually during this time, he had started taking Wellbutrin, and he was really, it was, he was doing well. He was in a good space. It felt, and he had said. he was doing well. There was times when he couldn't even finish a day at work because the anxiety was so much. But, you know, in the other day as a parent, you never really know. You only know what they want you to know.
Well, sure, that's, you know.
He was an adult, so.
Exactly.
But.
Did you ever get concerned about the, not I don't know what his habits were, but did you ever get concerned that he was like, he had a too easy a relationship with drugs of all sorts, or no?
Was always the concern for him, because the bipolar, the high highs and the low lows.
Yes. Yeah.
That's always a concern, right? Yeah. When you're feeling really good, you feel invincible.
Right.
So it's not only drugs, it's with everything. It's with driving. It's with everything. This is what happens when you have these swings.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yes, I always worried about that. Mm-hmm. You know, he would go through straights, like he would have a couple of drinks. He was never a heavy drinker. You know, he liked he liked to make drinks. He loved to make cocktails to create them. But you never really know anything, right? You only know, like, but he did have I was very strict on him. I drug tested him when he was younger. I didn't want him to start using drugs too young.
Really?
I told him, it's not that I don't trust you. I don't trust teenagers. It's what it is. And it was, so I don't think he actually really started using pot until he was like, tried marijuana like 16 or late 16s. But I think he might have tried other things knowing that it didn't show up on the drug test.
He was a smart kid.
Yes, he was very smart and almost too smart for the B where he was at. But yeah, so it always worried me a little bit. I mean, you can tell. Olivia, my daughter, I never worried about it really. She didn't have that personality. Mm-hmm. You know, she was stable, straight.
She's younger,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, when I found out she smoked pot, I was shocked. But then again, she started in college, you know, with her boyfriend. You know, it's different these days. But, you know, I always worried about it.
Yeah.
Did I think that he was going to end up being poisoned or this is going to happen? No, I didn't.
No. Well, but, that's the thing. How could you, you know, that's the thing about that, this particular phenomenon. It's like, you're not talking about somebody who's developed a habit that's, that is hooked. He's adventurous and you wish he wasn't but the message clearly, well, you're the one who's delivering it, but like the message is clearly, look, there's poison going on out there. It's circulating like
and it's circulating in everything, in cocaine and MDMA or Molly or whatever, ecstasy. Yeah. It's in everything and you don't know where it is. And because, see, look, when it's done right, then you're going to get addicted. So then Augie takes this Percocet pill and he feels the best he ever did in his life, right? Because that's what they say fentanyl does to you. Mm-hmm. So then you're hooked two times. They say one or two times and you want more. It's so addictive. So that's why it's being done. That's why the dealers are doing this, because, okay, these pills sell for $10 each.
Right.
You start giving the kids.
They're cheap.
It costs a dollar. Yes.
And they are highly addictive.
Yeah. So then they're stuck and then you're on it. And that's kind of the hardest part about this. And it's like, and it goes rampant. It's gone rampant right now.
So what's the hope? Like, what's the magic bullet here? Is it,
I mean, I don't awareness? Know. It's awareness and education. And it's not, I mean, I think when we were kids, the one drug that we were all so petrified about was PCP. Schools put that in your head with the videos that you saw at a young age, all that stuff. Like, PCP was definitely, I think, the one thing that was like, shit, that's crazy. You know, the people that took it got a bad rap. It was very, I think they have to do that with everything though now, because unfortunately it's in everything.
That's the thing.
And we can't, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. It's education, it's testing strips, but testing is what? You test one and it's fine and the other one's not. That's the problem. You can't.
Right.
It's so and again, like we said before, most of the kids grew up thinking these are safe drugs. Like, you can take Vicodin and not die. Mm-hmm. These are prescribed by a doctor. So you have to, then they have to be retrained in their mind that these are not even drugs that kill you.
Mm-hmm.
which makes it even more of a job.
So think about this with me for a second. Like, is one approach, you know, if it were easier to get mild prescription drugs, then, you know, okay, then there's a safe source.
Yes, and then, but then we're back where we were with another opioid addiction problem.
Right.
Or that's the hard part. It's like we're stuck. Like, we can't go back 20 years and change it. We can't now. It's like, I don't know the answer. I think the only thing is this group I'm working with called Void, Stop the Void.
Stop the Void.
I didn't help start it. Just ironically, I mean, the way it ends up and everything and right now, how prevalent this is right now. Working on a new project in the Marina Del Rey, the old chart house, changing over the restaurant, dealing with the leasing manager from the landlord's property who does it. Getting that going. He disappears for a while. We can't get in touch with him. But finally, one day, he answers the phone. I say, hey, Kevin, how you doing? Sorry, I've been not around. I'm just going to tell you, my daughter died. Shit. Okay. I said, well, my son died back in 2020. And I asked him, was it from fentanyl or, you know, poisoning? And yes, he said this. Yes, it was. And they even saw it on the baby cam. She took his Xanax. I mean, she had some issues with prescription, you know, not heavy. Again, like, these are drugs that a lot of people are taking for reasons of anxiety, this, that, you know. So she took Xanax, but obviously Xanax is hard to get. Can't just go to any doctor anymore, and you're trying not to let your family know, or whatever reason it is. You buy it on the black market, and there's fentanyl in it. So she took a Xanax with fentanyl and died. I think she was like 27 or 28, married with a daughter. I mean, this is just like this, right? Yep. So he introduced me to this group because he was so freaked out about it, and more a right, politically on the right side, and really, law and order, we got to get this guy, we got to do this, which he ended up meeting this group. One of them who started, there was two, Steve Filson and Jaime, they started because their kids had passed away also. One of them, Steve, was a former sheriff policeman. So I heard about them and I like them, and they're very, look, they can't keep, you know, they're doing this all on their own. They're using all their own money.
And is their thrust education?
In all the schools, going to D.C., trying to get the government to get more involved. So I have a little understanding of this. I'm not sure it's 100%. Just like when you hear a cop say, we're not going to arrest our way out of this. It's not going to happen. We're going to educate our way out of this. It's the only way to do it is education.
Right.
And that's what it's about. And that's
education to the kids.
Well, at this point, it needs to be everybody too, because hey, baseball players are getting, like, you know, the guy. What's his name? He was for the Angels. Tyler Skaggs, star pitcher for the Angels. He got the drugs from the trainer, but they were not real. Mm. They were fake, and he died. This is a few years back.
Yeah.
So it's not only kids. I mean, obviously you're going to hear more about it in the news when a 14-year-old girl, like, I don't know if you heard about in Hollywood, the school, the high school Brighton or in Hollywood, that four kids over the weekend were found, one dead, three unconscious from the fentanyl poisoning that they're buying in a park, and they're buying Percocet, what, fake Percocet. So you have to educate your way out of this. It's complex and it's hard. Right now, there's been, so I had did a fundraiser at my restaurant for, because they've been putting their own money in, and so I said, okay, let me try to raise you guys some money. You know, I have customers and people. I'll sell dinners, and so we raised some money for them. I think we got like $75,000. It'll be at the end.
Great.
So this goes to the education. Like, you know, they can keep pushing, and honestly, it's the kind of cherry that should be taken over by the government, by the individual health departments. I don't know where it goes, but parents of people that lost their lives shouldn't be having to do this for this kind of, it's an epidemic. It's really bad. It's a pandemic.
God, it feels like, you know, both, all of the memories are there, both when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And curious, but scared. And then, you know, not scared and curious and more. And then exactly. As a parent and then as a, you know, as a guy at a school and the, you know, you said it before. Well, with young people, it's like you're going to know what they want you to know.
Yeah.
But if they want to hide whatever they're doing, they're going to be able to do it.
Hey, and let me tell you, when you're young, you can hide when you're high. They know all the tricks. They know everything. So it's just like the only way of education.
And you're right. It didn't work then, right? Like, no. You know, so it's a real, gosh, it's a real freaking dilemma.
But right now, it's not like you're just going to get addicted. You could die. No, and the more people exactly. like, so how prevalent it is, we're getting ready to start this charity dinner at the restaurant. And one of my lead bartender, all of a sudden he's crying. He gets a note on his phone. One of his friends, he's older, right? They found him dead from fentanyl. And so just getting ready for a charity dinner to raise money
about
to this awareness yeah. about this. And it's like he had to leave. So it's really so prevalent. And like I said, the only thing is education. And education. So a lot of the parents were like, oh, they didn't know about this. And right then, because these four kids, girls that happened in Hollywood, all of a sudden a lot of information started coming from the schools. They really started focusing more on it. Mm-hmm. And now there's something called these rainbow or nerds. I don't know if you heard going around. It's like they're like look like Skittles or nerds, and they're fentanyl, and they're going around all over the country. And they're really worried about it for Halloween. Like these are gonna, you can go to a party, really? You go to a party, you have a Skittles party, and you get some candy, and it's gonna make you feel good. So it's just terrifying what's out
terrifying.
There, and
it's terrifying.
You know, and a lot of parents are out of touch, and they just want to say it won't happen to my kids. Oh no way! But like if you watch that video, you see these. A lot of this is mental health, and it's a lot of it is kids looking for relief,
right? Looking for
and
something.
They go on, yeah. But they're looking for something to feel better, the anxiety.
Right. Yeah, as you like you bump into so many different people, especially now, right? So many different people who are so different from your son, and yet at the same time, there's this common thing. They're looking for something.
Yes.
It's and the some things are for whatever reason, the some things are not available. If you know, if I just wanted pot, you know, and I was in the right state, you know, your kid's going to get it from the store.
Right. Believe it or not, the problem with the dispensaries is that it's more money. It's taxed.
Yes. Right.
Right. State taxed.
Right.
Well,
so somebody's going to buy it.
Makes it more expensive. So someone's going to go on the black market and there's fentanyl in that.
Right. Is there fentanyl in pot?
Yeah. They put fentanyl in everything because it makes it more cocaine. It makes it more addictive. In the end of the day, and that's the whole idea.
Yeah,
I mean, this is what I don't know if anybody ever interviewed a drug dealer and asked them why they're doing this. And mostly, I mean, you've been out of schools for a long time now. It's been what
10 years,
but you know what's changed in 10 years? Like social media was just starting then.
I know, believe me.
It's like I think it was Instagram and Facebook. And
well, you know, as you were talking, it was like way back. I mean, way back before Augie got there. You know, the numbers of parents and I had to have conversations with about their kids selling their Adderall or selling their, you know, whatever drugs they had or selling their parents' drugs, you know, going into the medicine cabinet again, like whatever. It's just like, so
they were doing it.
It's been around.
Yeah.
It's been around. It's been around.
But I think the anxiety part and the has gotten more I feel that the anxiety part has gotten more.
Yeah.
The kids' stress level, I don't know, they're always comparing themselves against everybody. And I know how I feel. I have a pretty good life. And I get invited all over the world, and I get to cook, and I meet people, and I have great I get invited to parties. It's great wines. And then I go on Instagram and I see other chefs or other people like, oh my God, this guy's so lucky. And I sit there feeling sorry for myself sometimes. I'm like, hey, just put this thing down and give it up. So
yeah,
that's me. And I feel like I'm in a decent situation.
Yeah.
So I imagine kids in the adolescent age, that puberty age, it's like,
oh, everything is either, you know, that everything is either a kick in the teeth or a feather in your cap.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
you know, that's, it's the worst time of,
your life.
His life. You're measured. Everything is a measure of your work.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And it's a crazy, that piece is crazy.
And people are so mean, and they're so, and kids are mean. And, and now you don't even have to see the person. So you can be even meaner on social media because you're not, there's no, and they're not, there's no one's going to hurt you. I mean, what are they going to do to you?
Yeah.
So it's so, whatever they call that, social media bullying and stuff. So it's just hard.
But I guess I want to ask you about the healing process for you.
Yeah. This is like the last one of the last pictures. So this one, it's one of the last pictures, like a week before I can try to get it.
Oh, yeah.
But as you can see,
his necklaces.
He has all the necklaces and everything. So I don't know. As the this started the healing process, like, oh, what am I gonna do? Like, I don't know. I was so tormented, and it was like, you know, you're crushed. You just don't even know. And I'm pretty callous. I don't like to cry. I really don't like the way it makes me feel. I just don't like it. It's like I have a hard time doing that, but I couldn't help it, obviously. But I held back so much. I wish I could just do it, but it's just I have this something that probably happened from crying when I was a kid. I remember when I was a kid, I could cry easy.
Oh my God, me too. I could.
But I probably got teased or beaten up or punched or whatever when I was younger. I don't remember. And then I started wearing his necklaces. I just kind of.
That actually sounds like a really. That actually sounds like a really.
It is
pivotal step towards healing.
But I have them by here, and then, you know, some have been like, this was given to me by my girlfriend, because after this was his, and then this one was things he liked, and Noah, my brother,
absolutely,
he found one of his picks that had teeth marks on it, and he put it on a leather chain for me. Originally it was a whole pick, but then it broke, and I kind of felt it looks like a broken heart, so. It works out. I don't know if you can see the pick thing.
Yeah.
So then I just started wearing the necklaces.
And have you gone to support groups or?
Yeah, I was gonna get to that. But and then this is instantly after. So I started wearing these right away. I felt like it's by my heart, and
I remember.
I wore the necklaces, and that helped. And then we got tattoos. So I never had a tattoo in my life. So me and Olivia got the same tattoo, which is a foggy love tree frogs. And so someone drew a picture. An artist made a picture of a tree frog on a branch with Augie's clothes on and playing guitar. And then it says, cheers to that.
Mm.
So that is was a healing thing. Mine says, cheers to that. Olivia says, Augs on it. My sister, Juna, also has a tattoo. So quite a few. I think you know Juna as well.
Oh, yeah, I know them. I know the whole clan. The whole clan.
So we started that, and then I put this strange here.
Yeah, what's that?
Augie had that on his leg, and it was something that he did was, I think it was Chance Hogan, did it with pick and stick, whatever you call it, pick and poke. So Augie was at home one day, and I really wouldn't care if he had a tattoo, but I thought it was a marker because it looked so bad. It looked like someone wrote on him with it. I said, hey, you know, wash it off your leg ever. I thought, Dad, that's a tattoo. So I put this one here, and then I've gotten a few other ones, all things that Augie, like one here that says love, and he drew this, and I put his signature here. Then he was going to get this one here, like says Gothic Tropics. That was what he called his genre of music. So these ones have the ashes in it. So this is all the healing stuff I did. And this stuff feels good because I feel like it's always with me. It's always this stuff. And this is stuff I wouldn't have had in my life. Right. So now I have it. So, all right. So, anyway, so yeah, it doesn't. So then I also signed up for this group. It's called Our House. It's been in LA for years. So basically, we just had our last meeting the 5th of October. It's an 18-month program. You meet once every other week on Zoom now. It's my group was 10 parents. that lost their children, adult children, not all from fentanyl, but there is another woman who had lost her son from fentanyl also. So,
well, I'm sure,
but it's healing, because let me tell you, we started here at one point, and you don't know where you're at when you start that, but you get to a point now where, okay, you know, they kind of, it's really well done and it works really well. We had a great group, and I'm lucky. I feel like every time I get in a group, groups stay together. I mean, we started off, and I feel like I'm pretty inspirational in the being like, okay, everybody, we're going to have dinner all together at Charcoal. And we all got together from the very early on, and that started a strong bond, meeting in person, outside of it, having drinks, talking, eating food. So that was really helpful, and I think it helped me along the way. I've never been ashamed to talk about it. I've never been ashamed to hide it. I just don't see the point of that.
That's really,
but the group has been great. And there's really something when you go on with 10 other people, you don't have to say anything. It's just this, there's something when I know someone who lost a child, or I've known people, and there's just a, there's a bond you have together. It's a horrible club to be in, or when you hug them, it's just a feeling
it's a
you
club
just
you
know.
You don't want to be in, but yeah.
No, but it definitely feels good to, I don't know how this, it feels good when I'm around people that have that, because when we talk, you know, because let me tell you, this world, it's hard for anybody ever to experience it and understand it. Like, you just don't get over it. You don't, doesn't go away. I'm just able to live with it more.
Right.
I'm able to function. I didn't leave my house for 2 months after that. I was like, okay, I'll be back at work on, when it happened the first day, I was in shock, obviously. I'm the one who got called first. I had to call everybody. I had to tell them, my daughter and my ex-wife and my friends. And it was like the freaking worst thing ever. You go through that, but you're in shock. So it doesn't register. It still doesn't register. Like, I can't talk to them ever again. You know, it's like, it doesn't register these things. You're in shock. And I thought, I'll be back at work next week and I'll work my way through this. I didn't leave my house for 2 months. I was like, no way. It was like, boom, I couldn't get out of bed, you know, for a while. I was fortunate to have a strong family to support me here and a lot of great friends who, you know, a lot of great employees and great friends. So the healing for me was that we decided to keep meeting on every other Wednesday, the group. So
that's great.
I think it's a good thing.
It's healthy.
It's healthy, yes. It's important and healthy.
Yeah.
So I don't like, that's the only healing I've done besides all the other stuff I do personally.
Sure.
I think there's some, and I work a lot and I keep doing projects, and I just, if I'm working, I'm not thinking, well, that's not true, because work is stressful. And sometimes, you know, I'm just like, hey, see how you're doing. I want to see how, you know. So Olivia came back from college, then moved up to Seattle. So she's not here. I miss her. Mm-hmm. She was gone 4 years, but in college they come back and forth. She was in San Diego.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Now when they get a job, I know when you get a job, you don't get to leave. You have to work. You don't just get to leave when you want.
Exactly.
So, yeah, but I think the healing's ongoing. You have to keep reading and thinking and trying. And I think I've done work with Median a couple of times. I visited Median. You know, I want to keep experimenting and doing stuff, because the thing is, like, Diane feel like she tells me she doesn't really do a lot, so she's at home, and so she has a lot of experiences like with feeling energy or things happening. But I'm so busy that I don't allow myself to see that. But part of the other healing is that his friends from New Roads, great kids, all the Shawnee and probably Lucian and Joe and Dutch. Funny, some of them all working for me. Like Dutch is working in the kitchen at one of my restaurants. These guys have been so good. They come and see me. They reach out.
Great. Glad to hear that.
So these friends of his, they created at the bottom of 17th Street in Marine and 17th. There's a dead end. And that's where they used to hang out after school. I believe Shawnee lived right near there. So they all go hang out there. So they created a shrine. We call it a shrine. And they put pictures up. And
where did I see that? I must have seen that.
It's at the bottom.
Yeah.
They have pictures of, it's the very bottom of.
And flowers.
17th Street.
Flowers,
yeah, there's
and pictures.
Flowers,
and, yeah,
pictures.
Yeah,
and so I go water the flowers at like three times a week. I drive over there.
That's good.
I see it. I don't stay long. I just feel like it's hard. I just look at the picture and I kind of say, fuck you, man. I wish you were here, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm in a bad mood. Sometimes I'm pissed that he's not here. So it all depends on my mood. But I go there a lot. That's for healing.
That sounds so sane, man. It really does.
To
incorporate, it's almost like incorporating pieces of him, even though it's not him, but it's like keeping it close in. And
you keep it close and you do it. And then also doing the educational part and trying to
good for you.
Give back to the just stop it. I need to stop it. Sure. Like I talked to this mother yesterday because she emailed me and she wanted to know about going down the line of trying to, you know, prosecute or find the person that sold the drugs. I'm like, it's a rabbit hole. You know what? And you have to, they're not going to do anything. So what are they going to do? They have to prove intent to kill for a murder charge. It's not going to happen. Yeah. No. You know, it's not going to happen, and the cops aren't even looking into it.
No, plus it's allowing the most negative aspects of it to eat you up.
Yes, exactly. More,
as opposed to like you're doing is somehow incorporate. Yeah, it's super sad. I mean, it's like seeing his picture. It's got to be, and at the same time, you know, it's a positive thing. It's a
feeling. Yes, it's him. And that's where he is. And I go, we feel like that's where he is. He hangs out there.
Yeah.
Spirit. We go there to water it. His friends go there. It's like.
Yeah.
Him. So that's important. So it's like, that's all I can keep doing the same because there's no pill. There's no magic thing. I know some days they're going to be hard and some days they're going to be easier. And it's just, you know, birthdays and anniversaries of things are hard.
Sure.
That's what you live with. But in the end of the day, I just have to march through life and giving back and trying to make a difference helps. Talking to people, giving my opinion, whatever I can do to make it better.
Well, Josiah, thank you so much for being willing to talk about what is just obviously hard.
Yeah, it's hard, and he was a good guy. He has music out on Spotify, Captain Rat Monkey.
Oh yeah,
it's out there.
I love that.
Interesting to listen to. Some of it's punkish. It's really, he wrote everything. He composed it. He played every instrument. He produced it. Very talented. He would have. Probably done pretty well if he could have just get through the.
Yeah.
I mean, his life was basically, you know, from 2000 March to March, you know, 20 whatever. That's 8 months of the pandemic, and that wasn't easy on him. But
I love that you're taking so many steps to be healthy and that work that seems so important with that group, which is great. So
yeah, that group like this, just hopefully people listen to this and they hear it and they understand it. Look, and this doesn't mean your child's a drug addict or anything like that. This
is just trying, you know, I want to circle back to that piece. It's like, you're not talking about a drug addict, you're talking about somebody who, maybe he shouldn't have taken a Percocet except like somebody was poisoned.
Yeah, it was poison. A Percocet doesn't kill anybody.
No.
If you take, when you watch that movie, Stop the Void, you have to take 20 Vicodins at once to die.
Yeah.
But you can take 20 Vicodins over a day. There's people that take 15 Vicodin.
Oh, yeah. I remember working at, years ago, I worked at a pain clinic. My previous lives. And people would brag about, you know, how many Vicodin did you have to take last night? Okay, 24. That's a lot.
But they weren't dying.
Yeah.
So
they weren't dying.
So that's the problem. It's poisoning.
It's poison.
And it's people just trying to have fun or find relief,
right.
Recreational. It doesn't mean that these are not junkies that are doing this. These are kids that are 16 years old. Some of them are like trying it for the first time and dying. That's just how dangerous it is out there, and how much it's important to warn children. And I hate to say this because drugs are a part of life and experiments a part of life. It's since the 60s, it's become, but it's been going on longer than much longer.
It's been going on
forever.
There's never been a culture There's always been, in every culture anybody's ever found, there is a practice of changing your mind.
Yes.
Changing your mind. And, yes. And you know, that's never going to stop.
Exactly.
So,
and that's the thing. So I hate to say that, but now you have to say, don't do drugs or you will die.
Yeah.
Or you could die. I don't want to say you will die.
Yeah.
Or you could die. So.
Yeah. Change your mind in different ways, but yes.
Exactly.
This is a terrible
world. Have a drink. I hate to say it, but that's like.
Yeah.
Buy some marijuana at the dispensary if you live in the state. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, my friend. Hey, look.
All right.
I so appreciate you taking the time and doing this. And.
You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.